Thank you, Don.
And Dr. Seeley, I want to let you know that, you know, I lived through the granddaddy of Minnesota floods in 1972. It hit our farm. And the official, you know, rainfall record was, I think it was 10.5 inches. But, of course, you know, we had pails and buckets sitting out. And my father, you know, looked at a 14-inch bucket, and it was right to the top. And I remember going to get the cattle in. Of course, they were, you know, they were in a tough spot. They were out in the pasture, and we came across a huge elm tree that had blown over and pulled a huge root mass up of it. And my dad said, "I'll go this way, you go that way." And, you know, he couldn't see anything, and I went around, and all of a sudden I was swimming in the swimming pool that this tree had created with the root being pulled up. Swam to the edge and kept going, and he didn't know anything about it. And we got back to our flooded barn, and it was quite a deal. We had a great time, though, me and my siblings, swimming everywhere on the farm that we wanted to. It was July, you know, it was 80 degrees, but yeah, it created a great damage. And since I've taken on this position at the agency, we've had 5 flood disaster declarations in Minnesota that we've had to deal with. And those are, you know, we used to think these were rare and unusual. We would just have to deal with them when they came. We've come to the point now where we never stop dealing with flood disaster declarations and, you know, over this 5-6 year period. So I'll believe your data. I don't have any data, actually. My presentation is a deficit of data, actually. It's more about what we want to do in terms of decision-making with our data, specifically our data that we have around our water programs in Minnesota. There we go. So this is a much higher-level presentation, obviously, than you heard from Margaret or Peter, and it doesn't have a lot of the data elements that many of the sessions you probably have seen in the last couple of days have. But what we're trying to do is figure out how to use what we have in Minnesota. We have some abundance in resources. We have an abundance, you could say, in terms of data. We have more data than some places do in the world, and certainly even in comparison to our neighbors in terms of water resources. We have, you know, some money. You heard about that earlier from Shannon. We have a dedicated fund to do clean water work. We also have, you know, if you look at it from a world perspective, Dr. Seeley showed you world maps. I don't have those, but if you think about where on planet Earth people are going to find the most significant combination of productive soil and abundant fresh water, you know, it's kind of right around here. And that's going to be a tremendously valuable commodity for future civilizations. So, you know, we ought to be starting to take care of it now and probably forever. Those are two assets that together, you know, support civilizations and have, you know, as long as they've been around. So we've got to make sure we take care of that. Now, back to a much more local perspective. We here in the state are trying to make sure we are, as Shannon had said earlier, accountable to our citizens for making sure we make the most of the resources we have in terms of funding and protect the resources that we have, you know, in abundance in terms of our water resources. And so how do we do that? Well, if we don't watch what we're doing and measure what we're doing, we feel like we're not doing well enough. And so this is a very generic description of what we believe is a start to a regular assessment of how well we're doing. And you can do that at many levels. You can do like folks do in Peter's program, where they look at individual farms and fields and see how are we doing. Are we doing better? What can we do to get better? You can do that on a sub-watershed level, like Margaret talked about. You can do it on a major watershed scale, like Shannon and her crews do, to evaluate our water resources. But we also want to help ourselves evaluate how well we're doing about cleaning up the water on a statewide scale, if you want to think of it that way. So it's really for us, you know, the us being the collective group of Minnesotans that care about our resources. The agencies, as you've heard earlier, are collectively responsible for that. We have, you know, voters and taxpayers, and of course we got interest groups that want to be informed and participatory in all of those things. So we want to make sure they understand what we're doing as well. So here's the, you know, kind of the idea we have here. You heard earlier from the Crow Wing County folks about the local water plans. They do form the foundation. Those people, those plans, that work that they do describes how they're going to take care of their own community, their sub-watersheds. Individual people are going to have to be participatory in that work. A level up is what we do at the statewide level on a systematic basis using the scientists that we have, the data we collect, the models we run to determine where the priority should be, what the consequences are of different scenarios that we may try and project or think about, because there's always going to need to be choices, and that's what this really ends up being. And then we have to figure out what we're going to do with our state funding priorities. Of course, there's going to be others that are going to have priorities to spend the money that they're responsible for as well. You know, these choices are what this is really about, and let me just give you a couple of examples. I mean, one is, how do we clean up water that's largely influenced by private landowners and the activities that are on that land, right? I mean, I think Minnesota is probably not too different than most states in that we have our greatest water quality challenges on the landscapes that have the greatest amount of private land ownership. If you are familiar with Minnesota and go to our northeastern Arrowhead area, we have a lot of public land. We have very high quality water resources. You go to other parts of the land where it's more intensively used in our urban or agricultural areas, it's not as good by and large. So, and there's really only three ways to do it. So you got to pick your package of using these three techniques. You got to persuade people. Just talk them into it. You know, they learn because they believe that something they do differently might be beneficial to others if they care enough. Secondly, you can pay them to do something in the public interest. Or thirdly, you can make them do it through regulation. That's it. All the science, all the models, all the reports, in the end, have to use one of those three techniques to get something actually accomplished on the ground. And that's where, as you heard earlier, we rely very strongly on a local presence, but we use a state funding mechanism for most of that. So we believe that a five-year interval is about the right space between these efforts to see how well we're doing. This will include some data analysis. We will have data collection going on over this period of time, but we will be transitioning to, instead of data collection to see what the resource is telling us, we're going to transition to seeing what the things that we've been doing have been accomplishing. So more about performance evaluation, more about effectiveness monitoring, more about making sure we're managing the resources we have in the most effective manner. We don't know yet what those data variables are going to be. You know, Steve, at the early part of this kickoff, talked about values and things that go way beyond, you know, science and even dollars. Priorities. Those are all choices that public bodies and their representatives make. And if you got 100 problems to solve and these cost a dollar to fix and you got $50, what do? That's the situation that every one of us gets put in managing water resources. And that happens whether you're at the local level, state level, the national level. And we need some systems to help us work through that process. One idea that came out of this initial effort was to use something like a triage approach. You know, you've got a healthy water, keep it that way. You got a water that's really messed up, well, maybe we've got to leave it that way for a while. And the ones that are on the tipping point that could become a problem, we ought to spend some time making sure don't become a problem. And those that are already a problem but haven't gotten so far past being fixable, we should focus on getting those fixed first in terms of a chronology or a sequence. Now, that sounds logical. It sounds rational. But then you go and visit a spot on the landscape that people care about, and if they're not in that tipping point category, they're going to think something else ought to be done, right? So we don't get to just pick a technique or pick a model and then apply it. We have to be able to rationalize it on a site-by-site basis. So we hope that this is going to help us do that. So we looked at four different variables broadly across the state: lake water quality, river and stream water quality, and then two categories of groundwater, groundwater quality, but also groundwater quantity, because that's also a really important variable in being able to sustain our water resources. That groundwater is consumed for various purposes and often, you know, takes many, many years to be replenished. This is not data, so I wanted to just tell you that. This is a mental picture of where we think things ought to be going. And, you know, I know it's not data because it's really not telling you anything other than we hope to increase the pace of progress over time about getting our water cleaned up. That's all this is really telling you. We have some in the state who have expectations that we should be done with this already. We should have our water cleaned up. And so it's about managing expectations on the one hand, but it's also about pushing ourselves to do the most effective job of spending the money that we have over, in this case, we picked a period of time that's coincidental with the 25-year period that our legacy amendment that Shannon described earlier covers. So here's the idea that we came up with to at least start this, and then in 5 years we'll be benchmarking against these numbers. At least that's the idea for now. We looked at which, and by these are the major basins in Minnesota, and of course Upper Mississippi is broken here into a couple of different pieces. You know, the Upper Mississippi in Minnesota, the Lower Mississippi in Minnesota, the Minnesota River, and so on. And so these are the, you know, the continental divide here is, you know, visible if you wanted to trace it up in the northeastern Minnesota where the water's going Hudson Bay in one direction, you know, Atlantic Ocean in the other direction, the Gulf of Mexico in the other direction. So we have these very definitive divides. We believe that these are achievable. So, and this was done with scientific input and data. Not in the same sense that many of you would probably have expected to run through a model or some such thing. It was based on a roll-up of a lot of data and modeling put into the hands and heads of professionals who exercise judgment. That's what this represents. So there is no model to back this up. This is a collection of all the work that we've done put into the hands of a group of scientists, professionals, and their best estimate collectively was that we could do this much improvement over this period of time. 62% to 70% doesn't sound like a huge step, but we think that's achievable, even a little bit ambitious. It means that we have projections about how the land's going to be treated and used over that period of time that are going to, you know, possibly need to be amended once we see what influences we have coming down the pike from things like Congress, things like our own state legislature, things like the economy, all of those different variables. You know, as you all know, one area of exploration and research is what we can do for more living cover on the land, on the agricultural land specifically, that can provide a market incentive for people to take on that doesn't require annual tillage. If that happens, this could change dramatically. So we talked about these goals. They are, you know, ambitious but yet achievable. We talked about variables that are inclusive of things beyond just chemistry and biology. They include some other things too, such as, you know, values, you know, recreation, things like that, that are more difficult to put a true value on. Oops, why am I going backwards here? Sorry. So here's the data that was used on those various basins. We actually broke this down by those, you know, 10 or so basins in the state, and you can see that they're not all the same. You know, some we hope to improve a little more than others. The potential for improvements there. Some, you know, maybe not so much because we just are looking at maintaining an existing state of already decent water quality. Rivers and streams, it's the same sort of approach, looking at, in this case, instead of the chemistry, looking at the biology, the fish-based biotic integrity, which is what Shannon's group really spends a lot of time on, or at least one of the things they do, looking at the ecosystem, if you will, in the stream to track a more long-term measure of water quality improvement, you know, things like, you know, nitrates and phosphorus and sediment kind of come and go, right, year to year, day to day even. the health of the stream can really be measured more long-term by the food chain in that stream, and this is what this variable is seeking to do. So you can look at this one, and for example, you can focus on southeastern Minnesota, the lower Mississippi. We actually are aiming for the lofty goal of no change. You know, so that doesn't sound real ambitious. 25 years later, we're right where we are today. However, you look at, you know, expected land use changes, you look at development trends, you look at what's possible to do in that area, and that's probably reasonable and maybe even ambitious, although it's pretty hard to sell people on that sometimes. They want to do better, right? We all want to do better. But that was one of the more revealing aspects of this, is that in some places, just holding our own is going to be considered both realistic and ambitious. And here you can see that same thing. We've got the same sort of breakdown of different possible improvements. You can see, I can go back one more here, the Red River in northwestern Minnesota, if you look at the upper left-hand corner of this, a very modest 2% increase in the Red River's water quality. That's a very, very rural agricultural landscape that's subject to a lot of flooding and wind erosion that, of course, ends up in our rivers and streams. And so we don't expect that landscape to change that much in 25 years. It's not going to be possible to make major strides in terms of numbers, but we do see some improvement being projected there. Groundwater quality, this one, we looked at two variables. One was nitrates, which, of course, are typically accelerated by agricultural production where they're applying fertilizer. There's also some natural background in there as well. And arsenic, which, of course, is a natural background parameter, which is important to, you know, well drillers when they're putting in a new well to make sure that that health concern is addressed. And that's mostly about putting a well in a place where you can, you know, minimize hitting water that includes this parameter. So it's not a land management aspect. Nitrates are. We wanted to have two measures that could accommodate both types of situations. Groundwater quantity. Here we didn't break it down quite so specifically because groundwater quantity is very dependent on the geology, as most of you know, and it's also dependent on the land use. So where you've got sensitive geology and you got a land use that's going to be consuming water, that water goes onto the ground, you know, for irrigation typically, and then it goes into the ground. That's not consumed, and we have land that's being fertilized at the same time, and that's where our highest risk areas are. Since this was put together, the Department of Agriculture is doing private well testing across all of Minnesota and those agricultural landscapes. I think they're going to do 70,000 private well tests, and they are going to be able to tell people whether their well is safe or not, and if it isn't, then some remedies to try and deal with that. I know they've got some preliminary data that shows that there are a significant increase in what they thought even would be in some of those wells in terms of nitrates. So this is what we're trying to do for, you know, our first attempt. We can come back and tell you in 5 years, you know, what we learned and what we did in terms of adjustments. That's going to be important. We're going to include, you know, a number of other stakeholders. It really is, you know, led by the agencies because they're the possessors of the data and the responsibility to expend the resources. But many, many others care about this and will be included along the way. So I'm going to do a bonus here, because someone asked about it. This wasn't in place when Don called back in whenever it was and said, you know, talk about what's going on in Minnesota. So I wanted to just bring this up real quickly because people have asked me about it. As someone alluded to earlier, Governor of Minnesota personally suggested that we include more buffers on Minnesota's lakes, rivers, and streams. That happened, he suggested that in January, and it became law in June, which is very, very rare that something is raised by the governor of that sort and that the legislature and others actually can pass something, especially with a divided legislature, in our case, that quickly. So we're still now dealing with the how we're going to actually make it happen aspects, and so I just want to give a little bit of a preview on this. You can see more on our website, or you can find me, and we can answer more questions. But you know, here's the case of where you know, having people do what they're supposed to do isn't working so well, right? This is a problem for people that are downstream from this site. And the answer about what we could do about it before this law was passed was absolutely 100% nothing, because there's no way to, other than ask the person to do better or ask them to take some public money to put a practice in, which they didn't do, you can't fix it. And it's inequitable to have the person downstream doing something and this person not doing something is what it comes down to. And so this is what, and I'm not going to go to all the data. We have more of that on our website if you want to read it. But that's, in essence, what the issue was. Some people were doing something with either their own initiative or some federal or state or local conservation program, and others who had a problem that needed to be dealt with weren't. The one bit of data we'll show you, of course, is that buffers do some good. You know, this is a 1940s technology, so if you've been around since then and working in water quality, you probably already heard this from someone a couple of decades ago. Here's a very modest buffer which would meet the criteria of this law. It's got, you know, this is a slightly altered stream, maybe, I don't know. You know, they're all in the agricultural landscape modified in typical fashion by either deepening, straightening, widening, or if not that, they often have additional water being shunted into them with either underground or surface drainage. The law allows for people to hay and graze that buffer if they choose to, so it's not a total restriction. There are conservation programs that can help with that if they're interested. Here's more information, okay? I don't want to dwell on this, but people have asked, well, how did this happen? What is it? And where can I find out more? So I'm giving you a very, very short tease about that. If anyone else from outside of Minnesota wants to know more, they can look this up or they can get a hold of us and we'll help you understand that. So with that done, I'm going to finish and we'll move on to the next piece.
All right, thank you, John.